Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My non-random guest. I'm so excited. I'm falling over my words here. My non-random guest tonight is Pete the Retailer. Pete, thank you for joining me.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
It took a long time for us to align our schedules to make this happen, but I'm excited that we could make it happen. Pete, could you tell the folks a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I'm probably best known for at this point as the co-host of the Star Wars Minute podcast, which we go through one episode for each minute of the Star Wars saga, and we're a little approaching the end of our fourth movie there, so it's about 500 and something episodes. And I also am just about to wrap up a show we do called Alphabetical, where we go alphabetically through all the Beatles songs. So it's a very precise, kind of OCD fun series of podcasts.
It's the opposite of what I do. I do have many questions about the Star Wars Minute, though. I know. So have you gone, I think I know the answer to this already, but so what you're going chronologically by actual release date?
Yes.
All right. And now what about special editions, despecialized, all that good stuff?
For the original trilogy, because it was, the ones that we were most familiar with, we went with the original kind of home video release, basically.
Okay.
So non-special edition, the one that most of us grew up watching.
Now, are you one of these people? I know, and I no judgment in that phrase, these people. An incomparable regular Dan Morin is a big Star Wars fan, and he is one of these people who has a laser disc player just so he can play the laser discs of the original trilogy. Are you in this camp?
No, I'm not. I'm not opposed to that. And if I was a little bit more, I don't know, maybe if I had a little bit more space in my life, I might have that set up. But I have the, I've digitally gotten all kinds of, I've got the copies I bought from somebody on eBay once, DVD rips of the laser discs. So they just, they piped the Laserdisc in to their computer and then recorded it onto DVR. And then, they've done these despecialized editions where they take all the highest quality sources and basically make an HD version of the non-special edition.
So how do you feel about the, because the same thing happened with Star Trek in that they re-released the Next Generation. We're going to be talking about a Next Generation episode. So it all makes sense. So they, they remastered it. They changed the special effects, and they did this for the original series as well, for the Blu-ray releases. And I feel like it wasn't controversial in the Star Trek universe of fans just because, they did a great job and it looks fantastic. And for the original series, at least on the Blu-rays, you can play either original special effects or spiffified ones.
Can you? Really?
You can on the Blu-rays.
Oh, that's good to know, because I forget who's got what as far as the streaming services, is who's got kind of original versions and who's got the digital, the updated versions. So every once in a while, if I go to watch one and then I'll notice that it's the updated version, I'll get kind of taken out of it. I'll be like, oh, was that different? Is this different? I spend the whole time being like, is that new? Did they change that? Did the planet look like that? And then,
well, you can generally tell the planets are always, when they're in orbit, they look radically different because, 1960s right. special effects, late 2010 special effects, very different.
Right.
My favorite thing they did though in the original series Blu-rays is they made the Gorn blink.
Oh, weird.
Which is ridiculous, but also fantastic that they bothered to do that.
I think they should have made him wink, just like every once in a while.
Well, they're punching Captain Kirk and then he looks at the camera and winks.
Yeah.
So are you a purist then? Or is it just that you get wrapped up in, and specifically talking about Star Wars, get wrapped up in, oh, was it like that? Or will you probably know immediately if it was different or not? But
yeah, with Star Wars, I know, and with the original series, I feel like I am a lot more familiar with it, so I become aware of it and I get distracted. But and I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit more. But with the Next Gen, I haven't really watched much of it since it was on, you know, since it was broadcast originally. And so a lot of these, it's like, oh yeah, I remember that episode, and it's just kind of a hazy memory. So going back and watching the remastered edition, I'm not as, you know, it's not rote in my head that I'm like, oh, that they changed that. I'm just kind of like, okay, yeah, I'm this may have been remastered or not. I can't remember, but it looks good.
Well, that's fair. So let's talk a little bit. Well, we've talked enough about remastering things, even though I think that's a fascinating topic. Sure. And certainly Star Wars fans I know have very strong feelings about various edits and de-edits and unedits and changes. George Lucas seemed to not be able to resist tinkering.
Yeah. Also, see, if they did that what you were just talking about, where you could watch either one, mm-hmm. they did that for Star Wars, I'd be fine with it. That's I'm like, sure, make all the changes you want as long as I have the option to watch the original also.
I would not be surprised. I have no insight into the machinations of the Disney people, but I can't imagine Disney not releasing a Blu-ray that has both the original movie and then the option to watch it specialized up, just because they'll sell so many of them.
Yeah, and based on their track record, we know that they like money.
Exactly. And they will. And we'll get to Star Wars. But one of my favorite things about Star Wars, The Force Awakens, is I thought to myself, well, Lucas is a company that is a master at, you know, marketing stuff, because I think they really started the modern kind of film tie-in with all the toys and stuff. And, you know, mm-hmm. you can go anywhere and not see a Star Wars toy or tie-in. And I thought, you know, Disney, of course, also really super great at this, but how could they improve on it? And then I saw BB-8 branded oranges, and I knew Disney was just a level above what Lucas could do.
They're one step ahead.
That's right. It's amazing. But let's talk about Star Trek, which Paramount and CBS less effective at marketing Star Trek, I feel. But that's a topic for an entire different podcast. Would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I grew up with it. My dad was kind of a, you know, original vintage Trekkie. So he watched the, you know, the original series when it was on and loved it then. And so then when, you know, it was kind of around, and then when Next Gen started, I was like prime nerd age, you know, it was like, right, you know, what would have been, I guess, like middle school kind of thing, where it was just like, I get to talk to my nerd friends about this thing, and you're like, oh, the new Enterprise and all this stuff. And it was perfect for me. And it was kind of appointment television at the time. Since then, I've drifted off on some of the other variations. But
we lost you to Star Wars. What happened?
Yeah, well, I mean, Star Wars has always been kind of, you know, my native tongue. Mm. But, you know, because it was my, you know, all the Star Wars movies, you know, the original Star Wars movies all came out before Next Gen started. So it had, you know, that was my kind of, this was what was going on with my life until then. And then, mm-hmm. you know, Next Gen started as a, you know, a kind of follow-up to something from my dad's generation. So it was kind of, you know, still a little bit secondhand, but it was renewed for my tastes. So I certainly enjoyed it, but it wasn't, you know, native to me the way that Star Wars was.
And so if you had to pick a favorite franchise of Star Trek, I keep wanting to say Star Wars. It's very confusing. What would you pick? It's Star Trek.
From Trek, what's my favorite? Original series, totally. Mm-hmm. It's the one that I've, you know, backwards and forwards, I've watched most of those. There's still a few that I'm a little bit hazy on going back because they kind of blend together. Or it's ones that I couldn't make it all the way through, you know, repeated viewings.
Yes.
Yeah, even though Next Gen is the one that I have kind of the most firsthand memory of, you know, it was very much, like I said, appointment television that, you know, I knew what I was doing every, what was it, Fridays? Or I forgot when it was originally on. But no,
it was syndicated, so probably different times for different markets, right? Because I think it was Saturday for me. I lived in New York.
Oh, yeah. So maybe it was Saturday for me too.
Oh, well, there you go.
I also lived in New York.
Ah, did you watch it on, what was it, WPIX Channel 11?
Sure.
Yeah. See, there you go. That's where I watched it as well. We could talk all about all the different stations that were in New York, but we won't do that. So it's interesting that you picked the original series as your favorite series, because I feel like Certainly the first season of The Next Generation is the most original series-esque, and the episode that we watched, Skin of Evil, which is season one, episode 22, I want to say? Yes, okay.
Yeah.
I had to check that. Has a lot of pacing that reminds me very much of original series episodes. Original series episodes obviously were longer than the Next Generation episodes, so there were many more shots of, you know, people walking down corridors and a lot more pauses than you would find in a modern show. And as I was watching Skin of Evil again for the first time in forever, it struck me at how much doesn't happen in this episode, if that makes any sense. There's a lot of people, you know, giving meaningful glances. There's a shot of when they beam down to the planet, where the camera is just like staring at a empty piece of scenery for maybe 15 seconds, and then they materialize. And I was just like, what? Who edited this episode? It needs to be a little peppier, people. That would be my note if I was an executive, a studio executive. I'd say make it peppier.
I mean, faster, more intense.
Exactly. Yeah. From George Lucas. But this episode is, we were talking a little bit before we started recording, is probably one of the most notorious Star Trek The Next Generation episodes because it features the death, a spoiler alert, the death of a crew member, Tasha Yar, dies in this episode.
Yeah, and in a way, it is a lot like an original series episode, except with that major, it's almost like, you know, a reinterpretation, like a... I can't think of the word I'm looking for, but you know, when they put a modern take on something, and it's kind of, so it's this kind of homage almost to an original series format, but with like, oh, what if in an original series episode, like somebody who's, you know, in the opening credits has their name in the, you know, opening credits role. What if they just died and it's not, you know, a huge, you know, season ending cliffhanger. It's not you know, it's not a huge dramatic kind of blaze of glory kind of thing. It's just like, oh yeah, sometimes we run into bad guys and they're dangerous.
Yeah, they sometimes kill people and they don't come back. Like, so generally, this isn't the first time someone, a character we know, dies in Star Trek, but this is the first time they die and they don't come back.
Right.
She feel like, oh, they're going to, you know, they're going to, there is a scene where they whisk her body to sickbay. And Dr. Crusher tries all kinds of things to reanimate her, or not reanimate her, but to revive her. different meanings, reanimate. But it all fails, and she's very sad. Everyone is a little bit sad. But I had, when I watched this episode, at least in my memory, I had a very strong memory that it kind of built up to her death, and it doesn't. It's like the first 10 minutes, she's dead, and we carry on.
Yeah, that was... I had the same kind of feeling that it was like, oh, I think this could have been, you know, in the promos leading up to the airing of the episode originally, that they kind of like, you know, this week on Star Trek, a deadly villain. And like, you know, I think they showed a clip of, you know, because Riker gets kind of sucked into the, the slick there.
Which we'll, so I think we'll talk about it.
They kind of made it seem like, oh, maybe Riker dies, because they were like, you know, somebody, they implied that somebody dies, and they showed Riker kind of tumbling into the slick, and they were like, so it made it seem like a thing. And then I also remember it kind of like being more of a mystery for a little while, like, oh, somebody's going to die, who's it going to be? And then having it be Tasha. But then watching it just yesterday for this, it's like, it's pretty quickly, you know, pretty right in there, might even be, you know, before the first break, after they come back from the credits.
It definitely is. It's like the first 10 or 12 minutes. And then, spoiler alert, she's dead. And it's, I mean, on one hand, I can understand what they're trying to do. They kind of subvert the whole idea that, you know, she wasn't doing anything to like save the galaxy, or, she wasn't even trying to save. I mean, she was trying to save a crew member because they knew Deanna and this guy were trapped in the shuttle and injured. But she wasn't doing anything super heroic. She was just kind of doing her job, and she died.
Right.
So on one hand, I respect that. On the other hand, it's not very satisfying.
No, I think, you know, if they had kept it, I mean, I guess now we're kind of in more of that with, you know, Game of Thrones and stuff like that. Kind of, if they had kept up with it and just been like, look, you know, things are dangerous. Anybody can die at any time. But the fact that it's just kind of like a one-off, like, Yeah, contract dispute, and this person's gone.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all. The only other people that are going to die from here on in are people that you just met this episode. So.
Yeah, that's true. And so the backstory, of course, is that Denise Crosby, the woman who plays Tasha Yar, decided at a certain point she no longer wanted to play Tasha Yar. I think mostly based on the fact that the first season was, you know, I love Star Trek, but let's be honest, first season of Next Generation, not very good. And so I imagine she thought, I don't want to be stuck in this crappy show, doing this crappy stuff and not being given much. Cause I mean, Tasha Yar, not well used in general. Especially the first season, they focused mostly on, Picard and Riker, and everybody else is kind of supporting characters. As the seasons go on, we learn more about the other folks and they get their moments to shine. But, Denise Crosby apparently was not patient. I imagine she regrets making the decision, but I don't want to speak for her. I don't know her mind. But they wanted to get rid of her. So they decided we'll kill Tasha Yar. It'll be very exciting. It wasn't all that exciting.
No. Yeah. It was weird. I guess it was, you know, looking at it kind of critically, objectively, her character is a little bit redundant, you know, because I think what she does and what Worf does.
It was unclear why they had both.
Right. But so I can see where that was going. And I think, you know, she would, I guess, originally tried out for audition to be Troy. And they thought, you know, they went a little bit with her as Troy in kind of pre-production and then flipped it around. Marina Sirtis came in and they were like, no, you know what? Let's make her the counselor and we'll make her the, I think they might have just invented the character for her.
She does a good job. I mean, I have no complaints about what Denise Crosby does with Tasha Yar. I mean, she wasn't given all that much. I mean, the only thing that we know about Tasha Yar is she comes from a planet where there are rape gangs.
Right.
And she has escaped it. She's had a very difficult youth, and she has become, you know, on her own. She's tough, and that's her whole character. She gets more interesting throughout the seasons, even though she's not an actual character. We find out that she and Data had a romantic relationship of one kind or another, and that's where we find out that Data is, of course, fully functional. She comes back as a Romulan, so interesting things happen, but while she was actually a full-time character on the show, they didn't do too much with her.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. So I guess we should talk about, you know, I'll give the quick overview of what happens in this episode. It's very simple. Deanna Troi is off on some conference or something. She's coming back. Her shuttle is having trouble. The Enterprise is like, hey, what's going on? And her shuttle crashes on this planet. They go, and this is interesting. So her shuttle crashes on a planet, but the engineering has taken the warp core offline to fiddle with the dilithium crystals. And so Captain Picard is like, hey, engineering, we need to, you know, get warp speed. And engineering is like, but we have the crystals out. Can it wait like 4 hours?
That guy seems like he's going to be something.
Right? That guy is hilarious because every time he answers starts a communication, he says his whole name, Lieutenant Commander Leland T. Lynch.
Yeah. Yeah, so it makes it seem like he's going to be like, okay, well, this guy's going to be a recurring character who's going to be like kind of a stickler or whatever. Nothing.
Nope.
I don't think he was in the background maybe once or twice, like, after that, and then that's it.
Yeah, all he does is move some giant quartz crystals from one place to another, skips over some tests that the computer tells him he shouldn't skip over, and then he's done.
Yeah.
But that doesn't pay off either.
You think anytime you see somebody being like, now we're going to skip the tests and go straight to, you know, nothing happens, nothing blows up, everything works fine.
I hadn't seen this episode in years, and I thought, oh, because, you know, most Star Trek episodes have two stories going on. Right. So I thought the A story would be dealing with going down to this planet and helping Deanna Troi, and the B plot would be engineering has to figure out, you know, the lithium crystals are going to blow up or something, and they have to figure out what's going to happen because he says, you know, we've recrystallized the crystals, but take it easy, Picard. Minimum warp. And Picard's like, great, warp 8. And you think, well, clearly something's going to happen. Nothing happens.
Nope, nothing happens.
They get to Vagra 2, I guess is the name of the planet.
Yeah.
And everybody's happy. It's clearly some soundstage somewhere in California.
Yeah, that's actually when I did kind of notice. I think this might be HD, remastered, because I can see the seam in the sky. So
that's the downside to the HD remastering of these shows that were not meant to be seen in HD.
Yeah, granted, since taking into account that the original series is my favorite, I find that charming. But
yes, and I've spoken before about watching these, and you can see handprints on glass surfaces, and the props really look like props. But it was a different time. No one ever thought that anyone would see these in such high resolution as we're watching them. So
right.
And the oil guy. They crash land on this planet. They go down. They beam down who? Riker, Crusher, Tasha Yar, obviously, and Data. And they see this shuttlecraft that's crashed. And I've never seen a shuttlecraft look like this shuttlecraft, but that's beside the point. It's crashed. And there's this weird oil slick in front of the shuttlecraft. And basically they're like, oh, that's weird. Let's walk around it. And you think, yeah, they should walk around it. That's a reasonable thing to do. Then they start walking around it, and it starts to move. And then Tasha Yar is like, well, let's go the other way. And I thought, I don't know if I would react the same way. Let's just try the other way with this weird moving oil slick. But they do. And it moves again and blocks them. And also, this special effect, not very good.
Yeah. Probably just, looked a little bit better in standard.
I don't even know if it looked all that good in standard. Because basically, I'm not a special effects expert, but it looks like they just took a Sharpie and just put one of those animation cells over and just drew on it. Probably did not do that, but it looks like it.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't look great.
No. They start scanning it because they think, hey, something's up. Which, good job, everybody. Suddenly they find out the Black Pool can talk in this very deep and kind of gurgly voice. He sounds like this. And he talks a lot about, tin. He calls Data a tin man, and he taunts them a little bit. And this is another interesting thing. I was watching this with my wife, and Riker calls up to Picard and says, we've got something weird is happening when a man shape starts to, rise out of this pool of tar. And Captain Picard says, well, what do you see? And Riker responds, trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, not very helpful. And so my wife said, shouldn't the comm badges also have cameras so Picard can see what's going on down
there? Yeah, there you go.
And I thought,
body cams.
Exactly. Because, Riker's not great at describing what he sees.
Yeah. No. Well, I guess that's why he tells you, because I think at that point he tells him to keep an open channel. So he's just like, look, if he's just going to say it's trouble or it's bad or
maybe we can get some
better context clues here.
Exactly. I'm listening, Riker. Don't get any ideas. And plus, Riker's a bit of a hothead. So I think Picard, sensing that this could be first contact, doesn't want Riker to go off and do anything. Although we find out that the oil slick is actually some kind of alien dude who's hanging out. His name is Armus. He's not very happy. He's not very nice. I don't remember what he does first. Does he pushes somebody around? This is the first thing he does. Tasha Yar is like, we need to save the crew. And he's like, no, I'm not going to let you. And she says, well, I'm just going to walk around you. And this is when he kills her.
Yeah, is it that? Is that the first kind of?
Yeah, I think that's the first thing that he does.
Yeah.
He talks to them for a little bit, and then he kills her. Which is crazy. There's a lot of talking in this episode.
Yeah.
A lot of people trying to explain to this oil slick that life matters, and they just want to preserve life. And Armus is all like, I don't care. I want you to muse me. it's hard to get through to him. So he knocks Tasha Yar down, and you think, oh, well, he just knocked her down. But they find out she's dead.
Just luckily,
Dr. Crusher's there, so they beam her up. And Picard says, yellow alert. Worf makes a yellow alert. He goes down to sickbay. Dr. Crusher electrocutes Tasha Yar's head a few times. I have to question the makeup choice also here. Tasha Yar has like this weird little
yeah, it's like a Gorbachev.
Yeah, exactly, on her cheek. And you would think it's like red. You would think it would be black. Because yeah. I assume it's supposed to be a piece of Armus.
Right. Which is another, you know, way that that could, not to just kind of play like what if, but the, you know, it seems like, you know, oh, if that's going to infect her and kind of take over, mm-hmm. is this going to be kind of one of those, you know, viral kind of infection kind of things? But
no, it's not. She's dead. We find
out. She's dead with a splotch on her face.
She's really dead. She can't be helped. Everybody's sad, although not that sad. this is where we find out that, Armus decides to envelop the shuttlecraft because he can tell that Deanna Troi's in there. And he basically says, hey, did you see I killed your friend? And she says, yes, I saw it, or I felt it. And he's mystified as to how she felt it because she was stuck in the shuttlecraft. And then she says, you know, I can sense thoughts, blah, 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 or sense emotions. And they have a little... She tries to go all psychoanalyst on him and figure out why he's so mean. And basically he wants to toy with them because he's bored at this right. point is basically what he says. And he wants to break their spirit and it amuses him and it makes him happy. And he tells Troi that her crew members have abandoned her and they're not coming back. And she's like, you don't know my crew. She doesn't say it exactly like that, but... She's like, they'll be back. And spoiler, they do come back. And they save her. She doesn't die. Although I guess, do we know if the other guy dies? I don't think the other guy dies either.
No, I think he just, it's weird because he just lies around the whole time. Like he's just lying. He's like a prop basically the entire episode. And then, you know, when they do get to him, they're just like, oh yeah, he's got a pulse. He'll be all right.
He's not dead.
Good. He's not dead. He's just been slumped over this chair for, you know, 6 hours.
Exactly. He can't be in good condition.
Right.
And this is where we have our little Picard summons everyone to his little conference room and tells everybody, yes, we're all sad, but mission first, we need to save 2 people and then we'll mourn Tasha later. And this is when Riker decides that he's going to go back down and Geordi says maybe my visor will show something. So they leave to go and they say, hey, Worf. Oh, Worf also gets promoted to head of security.
Right. And, which I think he's that for the rest of the time, right? Isn't he that from here on in?
That is right. He gets a different colored shirt and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But he decides I'm not going to go down there because, our objective is not to fight with this alien, but, to peacefully negotiate. So I will stay up here and I can do my best work at my console. He says something like that. They're like, okay, Worf. Whatever.
Again, that's like a concept thing that, you know, they could have kind of delved deeper into. I think, and in later seasons, they might have had lots of scenes of him struggling with that, mm-hmm. you know, decision of, you know, having a conversation with somebody, you know, about, you know, the responsibility and, you know, like how to best, you know, fight a war. That
I just
want to
punch him.
Yeah.
But they show like maybe 15 seconds of him trying to decide if he should go or not. And then he decides, no, I'll stay.
Right.
I'll be most of help here scanning for when this shield thing that this guy can generate weakens, which it does with Wesley Crusher. So the rest of them beam down and they try to talk to Armus and he's not really having it. He's clearly a jerk. He knocks Data's tricorder out of his hand, I think, and then he knocks Geordi's visor off, and he makes Geordi look for it, and Data's going to help him, and he says, don't help him or I'll kill everybody. And so they're like, oh, you're a big man, Armus.
Yeah, shades of that kind of Squire of Gothos or Q mm-hmm. kind of thing, except like not, again, everything's kind of a little bit, you know, not fully formed here, that it seems like they're going to be, you know, or was it Baylock from,
yes.
You know, it's like that kind of a thing where it's going to be kind of like an immature, you know, kind of, you know,
You're naming life all form. Much more interesting characters than Arvis. Yeah. Although Arvis, when we find out why Arvis is so sad, it's kind of interesting. But this episode overall, I feel like I'm going to jump to the end. Not very good, despite it being so notorious and kind of pivotal in Star Trek history. It's not a good episode, sadly. But we do get to see Jonathan Frakes covered in like chocolate syrup or something.
Yeah, according to the logs, it was printer's ink mixed with Metamucil.
Oof, that's awful.
Yeah,
it's gross. And, but yeah, he Riker gets pulled in, so Armus's powers are not really well defined, but he certainly has telekinesis. And he can, because he knocks stuff over and he pulls Riker into his pool like existence. And it is unclear what he does with Riker, but he does then, after he's pulled him in, he envelops the shuttlecraft again. So I'm not sure where Riker's body goes during that. It's very unclear to me, but these are the things that you ponder as you're watching this episode.
Right.
Although there is a really good shot, I think the best shot. And this entire episode is when they show Riker's face kind of surface and covered with all the goo and then back down into the pool.
Yeah.
That's very creepy.
Which I'm assuming is a model or something.
I would imagine.
Some kind of mold of his face.
Yes. But it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Then the rest of this episode, not very great. So then Troi senses that Riker has been enveloped and she talks to Armis and she's basically like, why are you such a jerk? And he says, well... I want to get back at them. And she says, who are they? And he explains that apparently there were aliens here that were the most beautiful beings you'll ever see because they came up with some process to expel all the bad traits and evilness from them. And literally it was expelled as black ooze that came out of them and they left the planet and abandoned them here. And he, Armis, is the collective evilness of all of these aliens that they have expelled. And he just kind of chills out in this planet.
Right. It's kind of like the movie Twins.
Yes, that's right. He's Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
And everybody, Arnold Schwarzenegger left the planet and said, and entertain yourself. You would think he would leave like a little buoy that says, do not approach this planet. No. There is a skin of evil, which it calls itself.
Yeah.
And then I thought, really, episode? It's a little on the nose to call yourself after that, but whatever. So we find that out, and everybody's sad momentarily. Because that is actually, it is a little ridiculous, but it gives you an interesting insight into the character. They don't really do anything with it, but it's interesting. And then we fast forward, Captain Picard says, okay, I'm going down. So he goes down, and then we have this scene where Armis is controlling Data to make him shoot Picard or Crusher or Geordi. And he asks how Data feels about that. Data says, well, you know, it's not really my fault if you do it because you're controlling me. So the joke's on you, Armis. He drops the phaser. And Data feels that he should destroy Armis, but Captain Picard wants to negotiate so that he can get both Riker, Deanna Troi, and the other dude who we don't care about back.
The Bernie of this.
Exactly.
Of this episode.
And it turns out Armis just wants, much like Shades of Star Trek V, he just wants a starship so that he can leave this planet and go, you know, knock other people's stuff off their faces across the galaxy, one assumes. But Captain Picard refuses to let him, says, I'll never take you anywhere. And Captain Picard figures out by talking to Deanna Troi, or no, I guess Worf and Wesley figure out every time Armis talks to Deanna Troi, this field that he's generating that messes with their transporters weakens. And somehow they figure out that, you know, it's because if you remind him of his crappy past and make him sad and angry, he can't control his fields. And so Captain Picard basically tries to make Armis feel as bad as possible to weaken the fields. And it works. They beam everybody out. They blow up the shuttlecraft so that Armis cannot escape. And everybody's happy. Except for then we get the final scene of this episode on the holodeck where we see everybody go on to the desktop from Windows Vista. Everyone remembers that. Rolling hills, blue sky.
Yeah, it's a nice place for a memorial.
Exactly. Although I did turn to my wife and say, you would think the holodeck could make a more realistic looking field because it looks super fake. But that's neither here nor there. So they have a lovely memorial. My wife did say, you would think more people would come for Tasha Yar's memorial. But it becomes clear why only the people who are there are there. And that's the captain, all the bridge crew, basically. Anybody right. you know on TNG is there. And they apparently she left a little video will, but it's not really a will. It's just, you know, her saying.
Her goodbyes. Yeah.
Exactly. She's like, don't mourn for me. I assume I died on a mission doing what I love, making a difference. And everyone's like, well, you did die on a mission. Didn't really make a difference, but it's not your fault. And then she basically, creepily, the hologram seems to know where everybody is. And she looks around and tells everybody how much she likes them and, you know, Riker. And then she ends with Captain Picard and she says, I never had a father, but if I could pick a father, it would be you. And he gets all misty-eyed. And then it's over. And Data says, I don't really understand the point of this. I feel sorrier now than I did before. And Captain Picard's basically like, that is the point. End of episode.
Yeah, I was wondering if there was deeper programming in that than, you know, like, because what if, you know, she was killed on a mission that, you know, Geordi was also killed on, and would you know, would they have that awkward moment of like playing the recording and being like, and she's like, and you, Geordi, you let me see things that I could never see. And everybody's like,
oh dear. But then they would have the hologram of Geordi who would be doing the same thing. And he would say, you, Tasha Yar, help me. Whatever you help.
I just assumed that when they went in there, they programmed to, you know, everybody signed in and then it played the things for them. But there might have been other goodbyes for other people. Maybe there's even like a second wave, you know, like later, you know, other people go in. And it's like, oh, you know, you, engineering officer who says his full name, Leland T. Lynch. You, Leland T. Lynch. Your attention to detail is what I'll miss the most.
I like to believe that that's true now. You've got me on your side. I think that Tasha Yar has programmed an elaborate, and it strikes me as something that her character would do, an elaborate kind of backup for her death in case she dies.
Right.
And covers a variety of ways that she could die. Like if she dies of natural causes in her quarters, she's sadder because she didn't die on a mission. But if she dies on like a super critical mission, she's kind of excited and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, what if she just, you know, tripped and fell down a turbo shaft or something.
Right.
And then people would care, but it would be weird when she said, I died doing what I loved, plummeting to my death. But just so this episode, I've already said, I'm not a big fan of it. I remember it being much better than it actually is.
Yeah. I remember it being somewhat traumatizing, but you know, I was, you know, not a really little kid, but I was, you know, what year was this? I don't even know. 88, 89?
Memory Alpha will tell me. 1988.
88, yeah. So I was, let's say 13 maybe. 12, 13.
Goodness. We are recording this on April 26th, 2016. This first aired April 25th, 1988.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
That's weird.
Timing.
That's perfect. I planned it. No, I didn't. It's random. But
no, and I watched it yesterday, so that I watched it, on its anniversary.
On its, what is it, 28th anniversary. Mm. Oh, boy, I feel old.
Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't have said that I was 12.
Now we can do our math and find out how old you are. But yeah, I think so I watched it when I was also, I was 11, I suppose, at this time. And I feel like the Armus, the oil monster, was much scarier then.
Yeah.
It's kind of comical now, really.
Well, I feel like we went through, you know, in the late 80s, maybe we went through a phase of these kind of slime monsters that it was like a thing for a while in the 80s. And now we've kind of grown past that. And so it's not as scary or impressive.
We've accepted slime into our lives and we're no longer scared of it.
Yeah. It's like, please, slime. Come on. I've got so much worse to talk about.
That's true. That's so 80s, man. And I will say, I think they, Armus is much more threatening as a slime creature, humanoid shaped, than as a pool that moves around.
Yeah, I was impressed to realize that there was an actual guy under there part of the time. Like, at first I just thought it was like a puppet
Mm-hmm.
But no, they put a guy in there, and for when he's like, because they didn't hook up oxygen masks, they just basically had to film him coming in and out a couple of times with like a stopwatch. Be like, all right, well, he can hold his breath for 48 seconds, so ready to go.
That's awful.
Yeah.
You would think that they would film it in, like, they would lower him. Well, then I guess you wouldn't see the slime dripping off him or something.
Right, yeah.
Because then they could reverse it, and then he's coming out. But then maybe that wouldn't look right. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a weird... I mean, as much as the slime creature effects are part of the identity of this episode, I kept thinking in a weird way that I would love to see this as, like, a... almost like a black box theater kind of thing. Mm. Or, like... was the Family Ties episode, like, "Hey, my name is Alex," or something, where it's just like you just see Yar, not Yar. You see it from Troy's point of view, pretty much. Like, you just start out with, okay, you see the shuttle. It's already crashed. You can skip those couple of minutes there. Shuttle's already crashed, and it's just, you know, Troy's point of view, and you hear everything that's going on, and then she kind of wakes up. Right around the time that Yar dies, and then she starts, you know, talking to Armus, and you just see just one fixed point of view the whole time of just the interior of the shuttlecraft, and you hear a lot of what's going on, and then, you know, people come in, and she can talk to people eventually via her communicator. It's a much more experimental take on it, granted.
That would be, well, and that, the benefit of that is that you can imagine Armus as any horrifying thing that you want,
yeah, exactly.
As opposed to a lame, moving black pool.
Plus, super cheap. I could sell that to Paramount probably pretty easily. I'll be like, look, one set, one camera angle, tell everybody else to go home.
I feel like there are not a small number of Star Trek episodes that were pitched in exactly that manner. We already have all these sets. Let's just use them.
Yeah, basically.
And I feel like they must have had this. The planet is not all that impressive, so they must have just had it laying around. And they were like, okay, we've got these papier-mâché rocks. We'll use it.
Right.
So overall, you would say perhaps that this episode, though important in the canon of Star Trek, has not really withstood the test of time.
Not as such. I mean, it's not... Objectively, I'd have to say no, it's not a very good one. It does have, obviously, charm to me, mm-hmm. for me, because it's, you know, I remember it vividly happening, and I remember, and I'm a fan of that, you know, it's very much an homage to kind of, you know, original series kind of vibe. So I like it for that, but overall it's not, like, I wouldn't want to watch it again anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree. It's an important episode. I like it for what it is trying to do, not for what it is.
Right.
Because it's not a very good episode, sadly.
Yeah.
Well, Pete, thank you so much for being on Red Dragon.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for having me.